What's up, everybody? Money in the Bank. Man, if WWE would end all their pay-per-views by 9:30 p.m. Eastern, I'd be a pretty happy camper, I got to tell you. But we are back. It is Sunday night, May 10th, 2020. Welcome to this WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view recap. I am Don Tony, as always, and join along with me tonight with the recap is...
Kev Castle. What's up, DT?
I don't even know how we could describe these two ladder matches. I don't even know how we get into it. I was typing notes as fast as I could, trying to remember little things that I didn't want to forget later. But I guess before we get into anything, we could just mention briefly... the briefcase winners. Now, I will tell you my two picks and I'll tell you why. I ended up getting them both wrong. I should have kept my original instinct, which I've said for 2 weeks, Otis winning the briefcase, you know. And I thought last week, and I talked about this on Friday, I thought last week I might have screwed it up and maybe Otis revealed, you know, a little bit too much, which kind of I thought maybe spoiled him having any chance to win. He did a little interview clip online, and he says if he wins the briefcase, he's going to cash it in for the tag titles. And I thought about it. I'm like, you know, that is pretty creative, but I just can't see WWE using the briefcase for the tag titles. Although Friday I talked about the scenario that, hey, maybe Tucker cashes in the briefcase, you know, because maybe somebody cuts a promo and, you know, Otis and Tucker get a little upset. Tucker cashes it in, they lose, and then maybe Tucker turns on Otis. I said, I just don't see that happening. So I thought, hey, you know, maybe AJ Styles, they need a main guy. The ratings are in the shitter. You know, he's back after being buried. That went awry. Then I thought, all right, there's no way Dana Brooke is getting it. Shayna Baszler, they just did the WrestleMania stuff. You know, Carmella, I'm not sure about that. And it really just came down to Asuka or Nia Jax for me. And, you know, I thought about it. I didn't think Lacey Evans either. She was just in this big feud. And Lacey Evans and Becky just doesn't seem money to me. And I thought, you know, I got to go with Nia Jax because Becky Lynch... God bless the people on the net. They love Becky Lynch's, you know, record reign and memorable, the GOAT. What the fuck has she done in 6 months? So I thought, okay, Nia Jax, you know, she's the one that created the man, so to speak, by, you know, punching Becky in the mouth. I thought she would get it because didn't we just have this big storyline with Becky and Asuka that Becky was going to quit if she couldn't prove to herself that she beats Asuka? I mean, I'm not unhappy with Asuka, but it's just like we just had this big feud with Asuka and Becky. All I'll say is this, and I'll give you the floor. You comment on the briefcase wins yourself, but Asuka just went through this whole feud with Becky not too long ago, and Asuka ended up on the short end of the stick. If they're going to give the belt to Asuka this time around, then I'm fine with it. Unless Asuka goes and confronts Bayley for the title. I don't know. I mean, what's your overall thoughts on the two briefcase wins tonight?
I got one right. I picked Otis last minute. I was first going with AJ Styles, and I went with Otis last minute because I said, nah, maybe they're really going to go with this guy. And then I picked Dana Brooke. Don't ask me why. I think that I just thought maybe they're going to give her – maybe it's going to be like the underdog for both groups. So that's why I picked Dana and Otis in the end. And Dana had no shot. I don't know what I was thinking. But I thought, in the end, I thought it was good. I was entertained by it. I thought it was entertaining. I enjoyed it. You know, we'll recap from beginning to end. But I like the win for Otis. I think, you know, the fans are going to get behind him once the crowds come back. Everyone likes Otis. Haven't seen anybody hate on him yet, which is rare, and as you know. And as far as Asuka's on fire. And DT, we talked about this. Asuka's been the MVP of this women's division since they have been sans crowd. She is having a ball. She is getting into her character. She looks like she's having fun. She's putting on great matches. She's doing her job well. And I think they rewarded her for it, DT. I think Asuka is the MVP of the women's division right now without the gold.
Yeah, you know? I agree, Soulfly. One of the most entertaining Money in the Bank matches in history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to get two things out of the way right off the bat because, you know, I always brag that, you know, our show is the most informative, the most research. I mean, you know, it just blows me away, the lack of effort by other shows. First off, let's just throw this right out the window now. I saw people trying to cause controversy online because the live logo kept appearing and disappearing, and trying to make it into news articles. Let me explain to everybody out there what a lot of you already knew. And I know you already knew, but a lot of people don't. WWE, and this is a perfect example when I say that people hear stuff, but they don't listen. WWE, when they talked about the Performance Center, they said a couple of weeks ago that what they were going to do is between matches, they were going to sanitize the ropes. They were going to change certain things. They were going to sanitize the equipment, the announcer's table. They were going to do all of these extra precautions because it's not just COVID, but you're talking about sweat and germs, and you just don't want to take any chance whatsoever. Maybe none of the wrestlers have COVID right now. They're doing rapid testing. But if you have a staff, a cameraman, someone like that, and sure, they got tested at the door as well. But what if someone is not showing symptoms, or they're not testing everybody every single day? You know, so they just don't want to take the chance of something coming in. And it doesn't even have to be a human person. They could bring in a piece of equipment that has germs on it. You know, that's why even when I order groceries, I wipe it down before I put it away. And, you know, you got to take precautions. So the thing is that when you change the announce team from the Raw announce team to SmackDown, you know, there's not enough time to have two consecutive matches when they're wiping down ropes and they're doing this and they're doing that. So they had to alternate. That's why they did it. It's not rocket science. If anybody ever just listened to WWE a couple of weeks ago, they would have had that answer, you know, but that's the reason why. There's no controversy to that. The second thing is, for those that were wondering, and I thought I cleared this up last week, the Money in the Bank ladder matches were not live. Obviously, you see the multiple camera angles, and you see cameras on one floor and another floor and an elevator and this and a bathroom and this and that. These were all done in segments. And for those that are curious, April 15th appears to be the day that they recorded these Money in the Bank matches. I got to give a shout out to Vindictive because she was posting some photo examples, and I'm posting a couple right now. Some of you may remember the TikTok video of Otis and Nia Jax dancing. Well, that happened to be in one of the rooms in Connecticut. And if you look at the outfits, exact same outfits that they were in Money in the Bank. You want to go one step further. When they had Dana Brooke and Elias do something, I don't remember if it's a TikTok video, but if you look at Dana Brooke's outfit, exact same outfit. All of those clips were from April 15th. So a lot of this stuff was recorded a couple of weeks ago. Not saying it's a bad thing, but when you do theatrical stuff like this, it has to be done a week to 3 weeks in advance. There's so much editing and there's so much mess going on. You know, you just got to record in segments. And, you know, the thing that people need to understand too is that, you know, there is tons of footage that never made camera. They have cameras following Corbin. They have cameras following AJ Styles, cameras following these people. And what they do is they take the best of all the clips and they put it all together. So you're going to see down the line, I'm guarantee it, unreleased footage from these matches. I think without a doubt, you're going to see some extra footage. But I got to tell you, is it something that I want to see on every pay-per-view? Absolutely not. No. But this was a great example of WWE turning chicken shit into chicken salad. You know, I like the music in the background. You know, there's no dead silence. You know, R-Truth, you know, playing up to a crowd that doesn't exist is all fun and everything. But, you know, it pisses me off that WWE flat out refuses to do what AEW is doing and putting wrestlers around the ring, sitting in the crowd, making noise, like Sean Spears shooting air horns off. You know, I mean, my God, people were popping because Huskus the Pig was yelling from the arena today. But I tell you, for under the circumstances, I enjoyed this pay-per-view tremendously.
I agree with you. I mean, at first I was, you know, doing my usual shtick, which I was like, you know. But it got better once it got into Braun. Like I said, we'll go chronological order in a minute. But once it went to Braun and Bray Wyatt, I started digging it. I liked the ending of that match, by the way. I liked it. I don't think Bray is buried. I hear that nonsense. You know, he lost to the champion, Braun's champ. He's just got the title. He's not going to fucking lose it. And I thought from there I started enjoying it. So I'm about 50-50, but the tail end was good, very similar to WrestleMania for me. Towards the latter part of the show, got better. So I overall, yeah, it was something to watch tonight again. They're putting out content. They're giving us stuff to watch for podcasters like us and all our podcaster brethren around the globe. It's giving them material too to review. Everybody and their mother right now is probably doing a review show. So again, it's we why should we hate on it? It's given us something to do. It's entertaining us to a degree, and this is what it is. You know, yeah. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, especially in this climate, can we really ask for anything more, DT?
No, well, you know, I will say this, though. WWE's you know, not everybody's WWE Network. WWE's charging regular pay-per-view price for this stuff.
Oh, they didn't knock this down?
No, they didn't knock it down.
Oh, I didn't know
so,
that. Okay.
You know, I could see if under the circumstances, they lowered the pay-per-view price. Now, look, a very small group of people are ordering the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's got to be very small.
Yeah, but the idea is that if we're in a special environment, chop the price down a little bit. This way, people, even if you just have the network and you watch it for free, at least you feel like, okay, you know, it's a little reduced rate. You know, the pay-per-view goes 2.5 hours, you know, manageable, kind of gave 20, a little
20
bit of...
$20, you think? $20, $25?
I think $20 would be very fair. I mean, yeah. if they would have advertised $19.99 across the board for anybody that doesn't have the WWE Network, I guarantee you there's some people that last minute might have just spent it. And it gave me a little bit of the old in-your-house feel. You know, two and a half hours, you know, boom and gone. I mean, I thought this show tonight, the recap, we were going to start around 10:30, 11 o'clock.
And as, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, they're burning through the matches. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, this shit may end by 9:30. And I'm like, I'll take it. I'll take it. I don't mind. You know, you get a little fix of some wrestling, a little theatrical. It's interesting. It's interesting. If you know, because me, I like to cover about all the legalities going on in the States with COVID. And, you know, remember what I said about the state of Connecticut. You all might remember 2-3 weeks ago when I said WWE is doing things that Connecticut has not deemed them as essential at that time. Now you realize they recorded everything April 15th. Go back and see what Connecticut was allowing and not allowing in April 15th. They got away with some stuff. Now, of course, you know, money talks and everything, but...
Yeah, they had probably the inside word of how to do it and get around it or do it just in time so they can avoid any kind of problem.
Yeah,
so, yeah, they did what they needed to do, and I think they... So you're saying, DT, when they were saying live, the controversy of other people reporting on it was they're trying to catch WWE kind of defrauding people, thinking it's live? Is that what they...
No, it was just people were trying to make a big deal about it, about, oh, why did the live symbol disappear? Why is it appear... I'm like, come on, man. That's almost as bad as people reporting last week that Vince McMahon was seen wearing a T-shirt. Oh, I mean, I put on Friday all these scattered pictures of Vince McMahon wearing T-shirts in the last 5 years. And people, like I said, you know, I saw this wrestling, I think it's Wrestling News website. I don't remember the name. Ringside News it is. And they actually had the balls this morning to write an article like, everybody's websites are really down. And this is how, you know, if you really want to support us because of what's going on, you got to click the links or click the links. And I'm like, no, motherfucker. The reason why your site is getting less and less hits is because in the middle of COVID, now everybody realizes nobody had fucking sources because they're so tight-lipped about everything in the WWE building right now. They never had sources. It was always guesses. They see somebody, you know, like Zelina Vega on TV, four segments in a night. Then they write an article, WWE is very high on Zelina Vega. WWE does not mention Roman Reigns on two episodes. Roman Reigns is a no-no. But meanwhile, in the beginning of the graphic, Roman Reigns' best matches, Roman Reigns feature on the website, Roman Reigns here. You know, they just don't, and I said this on Friday, they don't want to mention Roman Reigns because they don't want to link COVID and Roman Reigns together. In the very near future, WWE out of nowhere, you know, is going to announce next week, Roman Reigns is going to return, make an appearance. What does he have to say? And it's that. And it's probably just an interview segment, but they don't want to bring attention to it. But this is what happens. Now you see who has sources and who doesn't, for real. And SM Punk, I'll do it once. Oh, yeah! You know, it was Joe Punches. I actually got to agree with Joe Punches over here. You think there's a chance that Otis hands the briefcase to Mandy and says, Mandy, you go fight for the title, Mandy. I give you the briefcase, Mandy. That's not a bad idea.
That's not bad. Who said that, Joe?
Joe Punches, yes.
Yeah, I know, Joe. That's not bad. Can he do that, though? I mean, then again, this is wrestling. They could do whatever they want. But that's an interesting scenario. We'll remember Joe brought that up because I didn't think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Shout out to Dream 101. Shout out to J1. And Tom, because WWE took the challenge of we can't ruin a stipulation match worse than Hell in a Cell. I don't think there was anything wrong with it. I thought under the circumstances, look, I talked about it Friday, and I'm not a genius. A lot of people thought this. You knew you were going to see a Vince cameo. You knew you were going to see cameos from maybe some people that they like to bring out once in a while. You know, Brother Love in the bathroom, you know, washing his hands after in the stall. You know, it is what it is. You know, it's just to be like a little bit comical. You know, we've seen, you know, things like with the Matt Hardy stuff, and we've seen, you know, to me, again, under the circumstances, this was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Again, I don't even know how we cover those two matches. I mean, I guess we could just bring up little highlights that stood out from the matches. Maybe we could just get into those two right now because the other matches kind of felt like filler.
Yeah, we might as well get into it while we're on the subject. I mean, you know, the way they filmed this, the way they all kind of met in the hallway or the lobby or whatever, I enjoyed it. You know, again, as they were kind of introducing them all, and they were doing a duel, that they were going from the women to the men and back and forth. And now, I didn't know they were going to do that, DT. I thought did you have any idea that it was going to be a duel thing of a switch back and forth? I didn't think that. I thought it was going to be, you know, get one done and then go to the other, like get one finished and then go to the other. I didn't know it was going to be almost like a schmoz, you know, and mixing everything together.
Last week on both shows, they had that pre-recorded Corey Graves thing explaining as far as what the rules were, and they talked about how both matches were going to be happening at the same time.
I still thought they were going to focus more on one and then cut to. I just didn't think it was. It bounced back well. It wasn't. You weren't mixed up, and you weren't like, oh, I turned away for a second. I missed what just happened with those guys.
Well,
so it was filmed well. They did it pretty good. It went well.
The telltale sign right in the beginning, as far as the editing and the production, was when Asuka was on that railing and she dived off onto the women. You go back and watch it. You know, it was like three different repeats at the same time. It's like from the top, from the middle, from the bottom. Like they just showed it three consecutive times. So, you know, that is the result of having a couple of weeks to splice, edit, repeat, take this away. Sound effects, music, you know, the Undertaker stuff, which was pretty funny. You know, it was definitely well done. And but again, you know, this is something that took weeks to put together. So this is not something that they could just do live on a pay-per-view. I mean, if they would have done this live on a pay-per-view, to me, honestly, it would have been an absolute disaster. You know, because the people in the production booth would blow their brains out. Could you imagine? No, camera six, camera one. No, elevator cam. No, bathroom. There were so many things going on at the same time that their heads would explode. It would be like Scanners.
That's what I thought. I thought they were going to, that was just on the other night, by the way, on cable, Scanners. I thought they were going to maybe do a split screen at one point, DT. You know, a typical split screen, but they didn't even need to do that.
I got a kick out of Paul Heyman in the catering.
Oh, that was funny.
And out of everything, he picks the Italian sub, which I thought was pretty funny. But, you know, Otis kind of gave me, flashbacks of John Belushi and Animal House, you know, food fight. You know, I thought that was funny. Obviously, that was one of the last segments that they were going to pretty much put together before going on the roof because of the food. But there were a couple of moments that I thought was pretty fucking funny. Shayna Baszler choking out Rey Mysterio was great.
That was funny.
Nia Jax and Otis kind of pancaking Rey Mysterio I thought was hilarious. John Laurinaitis getting the pie in the face. You know, it was okay.
That was, in the cafeteria. Dana Brooke falling on her head and looking like she banged her head on the
floor. Yeah. She had the money in the bank thing. She, you know, Airhead thinks she's got the briefcase, you know, and Stephanie has to correct her and everything. Yeah, look, I think for everybody involved, I honestly think they had a ball doing this. I mean, you know, sure, there were some spots that were very physical. But you go back and you look at it, I think everybody was having a great time. But again, this is things that you have to see. This is why when live crowds return, it's not going to be as prevalent to have stuff like this because you're not going to get away with only a couple of matches live and then putting things delay or pre-recorded on the screen for everybody. Back in the day, for new listeners and viewers out there, you know, when we used to see a lot of hardcore matches during the Attitude Era, you'd see people brawl around the building, brawling outside, you know, and they would just show it on the screen. Everybody would be standing there looking at the screen, like wondering what's going on. But that was usually one match. You know, some main events, they would brawl to the back for a few minutes, but come back into the arena. Something like this, you know, trust me, WrestleMania's Boneyard match, WrestleMania's Firefly Funhouse match, and this Money in the Bank ladder match, probably three of the most difficult production works that WWE has done in a very, very, very long time. When you realize how much editing is involved and how much footage is involved, they put it together really, really nicely. Anybody that criticizes the ladder matches tonight really honestly should just go find something else to enjoy them wrestling, in my opinion.
I agree.
So any other spots during the ladder matches that stuck out to you?
I was surprised to see, it was good to see Elias came out, so I guess that continues his feud with Corbin because Corbin was bragging about putting him out. I didn't expect that. I thought the Asuka hitting Baron Corbin off the ladder, that was good. So there was like a bunch of a good spot. Honestly, DT, after I finish watching The Undertaker thing, I'm going to probably go back and watch it again after the show tonight. So since we ended so early, I'll probably watch the match over again, and I'll probably see some things that I didn't see because I was kind of going back and forth and chatting with people and stuff. But I think everybody got their stuff in, whether it was Carmella, whatever, everyone had their little moment. Nobody got like hidden or no one could say, I didn't see much from such and such. Aleister Black got his shit in. AJ Styles got him and Daniel Bryan in Vince's office. Everybody got a little highlight there. Nobody was hidden. Everybody got a little moment there. That's what I could say. And that's not easy with 12 people.
No, no. And, you know, again, they had so many cameras following around the people. But, you know, I've been saying this for weeks. You know, I was hoping that somebody get thrown off the side of the WWE building, you know.
So, unless the black got thrown somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know, Joe, if Baron Corbin is going to be charged with manslaughter. I mean, it's suspension of disbelief. I mean, I can't complain, you know. I don't know, you know, I guarantee you that and I'm not trying to start controversy with any other shows, but I know there's some people out there that are diehard AEW fans, and I'm a big fan of AEW as well, but something tells me they're going to just turn around and use this just to start shit. Instead of just saying, wow, you know, WWE really was creative with this. It was a lot of fun. You know, it was a mess, but it was a fun mess. Just leave it at that. Instead, you're going to see people, oh, well, you know, just remember, you know, the broken Hardys, and remember the compound, and remember the final deletion, and this is all inspired from there. And this is that, you know, how's about just it was a fun, entertaining, creative way to do it. It's not going to be done all the time. It's not easy. And they had this in the bag for 3 weeks. So if you think about tonight, you know, not too many people had to be there live to do work. Most of the people, Daniel Bryan, everybody in the ladder match from the house, watching it on TV and seeing how this, I don't want to say masterpiece, but how this gem was put together.
Yeah.
Trying to think, what other spots did we kind of like get a real chuckle?
Otis put the weights on AJ Styles, and he asked Ray for help, and Ray goes, nah, and he just walked away.
Yeah, it would have been great if somebody, you know, like showed up, like that we never expected that maybe would have lifted if AJ Styles. At the same time, though, I mean, it was a lot of weight, but, you know, you would think that AJ Styles may be able to lift one side of it and squeak out from underneath, but I did laugh my ass off when he opened that room and it was the Undertaker shit and it's all doom and gloom and it's, and I think Aleister Black almost threw him in there. He's like, no way, no way. And then Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles get in Vince's office, which you knew Vince was going to do a cameo.
That was good when AJ goes, let's put the chairs back.
Get out!
That was funny.
When get out! No, he didn't say get out. He just out.
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 Said out.
Out. You're fired. Oh, man. So there was some gems. I thought, you want to know something? You know, I know Nia Jax gets a bad brag online. And I know Shayna Baszler gets shitted on undeservingly in a lot of ways. I thought they did fine in this match. There was a couple of scenes that were kind of comical, and everybody's character just seemed to fit the right way. Even though I'm not a fan of Dana Brooke, and you know, I leave, you know, my comments off the show, but even her involvement in the match, it felt like, you know what, just put a bunch of people together, have some fun, you know. The Asuka thing, again, I'm a little confused with that with Becky because they just had that whole thing. But, you know, if Asuka, if this is going to lead to something else, and I'm talking about gold, you know, it concerns me about Kairi Sane because they are, unless I just fucking just thought of a brainstorm. What if Asuka takes the briefcase and challenges for the tag titles with Kairi Sane?
That's a possibility too. There's all sorts of possibilities.
You know, I just thought of that. You know, maybe you do that way, you know, because the women's tag titles right now, with all due respect, Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross, you know, it felt like a huge step down for the women's tag titles. So maybe Asuka, you know, look, I know they're advertising on Raw that the man is going to, you know, confront the winner of the briefcase. But I tell you, man, I don't want, unless Kairi Sane is almost done with the company, I don't want this split because she'll end up just being squat, you know, job material. But hey, it's just an idea. I'm not saying that it'll happen, but
it's possible.
It's possible. Anything's possible, man. And who knows? Maybe the Otis putting in the tag idea, it was a kind of way to plant the seed, you know, for a future cash in for the tag titles. Even though it doesn't feel like that'll happen, you know, I think it may. Never say never, especially, but you and I have been saying this for 5-6 weeks now. Asuka is the MVP of the empty arena. You know, Ryan Satin, you know, I follow him. I have no problem with the guy. I know a lot of people don't like him at all. You know, but when he said the other day that there's no disputing that Zelina Vega is the MVP of WWE right now at the empty arenas, I'm like, you're on fucking crack. You know, I mean, Zelina Vega's been fine as a manager, but Asuka has been the MVP in that ring, you know, just entertaining, yelling, commentary, wrestling, everything. She, you know, Zelina Vega's eye candy. She's more than just eye candy, but she's pretty much eye candy.
Right, but if you're talking about an MVP, you're talking about an in-ring performer, so I'm surprised.
Right,
I'm surprised he said that. I mean, it's clearly Asuka, and again, Asuka is looks like she's having the best time she's ever had since she's been here.
Yeah.
Honestly. You know, she's making the most out of these opportunities, and you would think she's performing in front of thousands of people. She is putting on her character. She's again, I can't say enough good things about Asuka. And maybe DT, again, maybe they are rewarding her. And is it possible that she is going to be the one to take the belt off of Becky?
They're so – you could see it, man. They're going – I talked about this Friday. They're going the Nikki Bella route with this. You know, Nikki Bella, you know, God bless her book and everything. And, you know, for everybody out there that was unbelievably startled that she was sexually abused at 15, not trying to downplay it, but my immediate thought was, I know I heard that before. And then it hit me. Lillian Garcia's podcast, November 2017. Once again, this is people that hear and they don't listen. She talked about it already, you know, but – you know, because everybody wants to tweet hand jobs. You know, yeah. But, you know, I'll tell you another thing that I absolutely enjoyed about this ladder matches tonight. And it kind of hit me halfway through. And I think a lot of you out there will agree also. And you might not have thought about it either. I think one of the best things about these two ladder matches tonight is that even if we had a full arena of fans in attendance for a live pay-per-view, that match could have still, pre-recorded obviously, but that match could have still gone off the same exact way. And what I mean by that is, as you're watching it, you completely forget that there's no fans in attendance. Because even if fans were in attendance, they could have recorded the exact same thing. Maybe the live crowd wouldn't have enjoyed it, but it kind of reminds me of boiler room brawls. You know what I mean? Like, the fans are just watching on the screen. So that match could have been done even if live fans were in attendance. It would have been remote. It would have been pre-recorded. I don't think fans would have had a problem with it. Look at Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt in that fucking garbage house. You know, most of that was pre-recorded. You know, and then they kind of screwed up because of the daylight thing. And I'll give WWE credit for this. They recorded this a couple of weeks ago, and they did it at night. So, you know, I wonder, fans driving on I-95. Because when I go to Mohegan Sun, we pass WWE headquarters. And, you know, I always wanted to stop in and wondered if they would let me in the building or, you know, maybe a security guard. I'm like, look, you know, I'm a wrestling fan since 1979. My uncle used to work for WWF doing the Ridgewood Grove Arena stuff. You know, is there any way I could just get a quick out? Out! It's like Ralph Cramden. Out!
That'd be great.
So, but I really enjoy it. In fact, after we're done here, I'm going to watch that part one of the Undertaker documentary series. Yep. They had The Undertaker on the bump the other day. And he's like...
I didn't see that. I want to see that, though.
Yeah, he was like, oh, my God, Undertaker's on social media. There goes my childhood. This is the final chapter. Yeah, this is the final chapter of what I've been saying for about 7 years now, that eventually WWE was going to domesticate and humanize The Undertaker.
Yep.
And this final stage of Undertaker's career, you will still get the pomp and circumstance with the dead man character here and there, but they are, within the next 5 years, nobody's going to say, hey, Mark, how you doing, Mark? No, you'll still reference him as Undertaker, but you're now going to be let inside the soul of the Undertaker. You're going to learn a lot, and then you're going to realize he's not really a dead man after all. You know, he's a Southern guy, you know, with a fucking legendary wrestling career, and we should enjoy it, man.
Yeah. It's a five-parter, this series, right, TT?
I believe so. I believe it's a five-parter. But, yeah, I mean, this is what's wonderful about pay-per-views ending this early. Could watch it tonight, you know, spend some time with my significant other, go to bed at a reasonable hour, give everybody a decent recap on top of it. And, you know, again, you know, I kind of wish that WWE would have adjusted the price a little bit, even though it wouldn't have applied to pretty much all of us, but it's just the aura. Like, okay, they lowered it to $29.99. We'll probably get a little bit less than what we would normally get for a $50 pay-per-view. And sometimes when you have the aura or the perception of something being discounted, if it's discounted, even if you weren't looking for a discount, but if it's discounted and you end up getting more, it feels like you got more. And what I mean by that is if WWE offered two pay-per-views, one for $50, one for $19.99, all right, you didn't mind spending either one. You're a millionaire. You're a millionaire. You don't mind spending either one. And you watch both pay-per-views and they're identical. For some reason, the 1999 version seems like you got more and it was a better pay-per-view than the $50 version, you know? I talked about this in the past. I had a friend of mine in grammar school who was poor. His parents, God bless them, they spent all their money to put him through a Catholic high school, a good high school. And he would go in there and he would look at everybody else's food and he would eat people's leftovers. And I remember, for some reason I remember this, one of my friends had a half-eaten bologna sandwich with mayonnaise. Ugh, I can't eat bologna with mayonnaise. So he's like, you gonna finish that? And they're looking at him like, yeah, just eat it. He ate it and he looked like he was making love to this fucking thing because he was so hungry. And it looked like a cheap bologna, like 69-cent garbage, no-name brand. The bread looked all soggy. But this guy loved it because it was free. And for some reason, you have a sample of something, tastes better when it's free than when you have to pay for it. So, KM Truth, what's up, my brother? So, no, Mr. Espinoza, I do not think they ruined it tonight. I got to tell you, man, you know, I've used this phrase many times in the past. Less is more. You don't have to overthink the wheel. You know what I mean? Less is more sometimes. And the matches early on, you know, they were what they were. I guess we could get into them because there really wasn't too many matches. Now, we did get two additional matches added last minute. One was on the kickoff. One wasn't. Kickoff match. Jeff Hardy taking on Cesaro. Cesaro is like, I don't want to say that he's like Lou Gehrig of WWE. I'm not saying on that level, but I'm saying like Mr. Reliable.
I was going to say, call him more like Joe McEwing. He's Mr. Utility.
Well, he's a utility, but he's Mr. Reliable. Like you need someone to give you a good fucking match. And when he loses, he doesn't lose. Like, you get a little frustrated WWE has him lose as much as he does. But you, like, if WWE decided to give him a run for one of those titles, like, it wouldn't feel out of the ordinary. You know what I mean? It still would feel special. Yeah, damn good match with Jeff Hardy today. I'm happy that Sheamus did not come out and fuck that shit up.
No, it was they gave him a good amount of time too on the pre-show. And Jeff, they got to build Jeff back up again, show him that they have faith in him, they trust him again. He's a star. We've talked about this before. Jeff Hardy is money. If they market him right, he's got cross-section fan base. Guys, girls dig him, kids dig him. That's what you want in a star. And he's got an established name. People just got to know that this guy's not going to fuck up again. We can rely on him. He's not going to have to go away again for a little while. That he's in this for the long haul. So I think tonight was a good showing of that. And I hope Jeff is here to stay. And, you know, they build him up to be the star that he can be. He can be solo and fly well on his own.
Yeah.
He need to be in the tag team.
I mean, they're really pushing this one last run thing, which kind of like annoys me because he's not 60 years old. This isn't like AWA career, you know, like we used to like see
40, AWA. What is he, 40, 41? 40, 41.
He's around that, you know, yeah. Like I don't, you know, I could, I'm not trying to be sexist, but I could see if it was a women's wrestler because unfortunately, and this is just a fact, everybody out there, but women's wrestlers have a much shorter shelf life than men, male wrestlers. You look at women wrestlers wrestling into their 40s, it is very, 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 very few and far between.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I like this storyline that this is like the final like run for Jeff Hardy, because you're feeding him Sheamus right off the bat. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, you know, I don't like where this is going, because does it feel like Sheamus is gonna end up in storyline jobbing, or I don't want to say jobbing, but losing to Jeff Hardy, if anything? Sheamus should be the one to hit the final nail in the coffin of Jeff Hardy before he is done as a WWE wrestler.
Yeah.
I find it a little confusing to do it that soon unless Jeff Hardy's not going to be around all that long.
I don't know. I think they're just trying to build them both up. But you're right. Like, who goes over who if they have long-term plans for either one of them? I mean, Sheamus is a great heel, and he's still a young man. He's not done yet. And Jeff Hardy, they could still get some good mileage out of him. I think Jeff should stay here. I think he goes to AEW. There's too many guys just like him over there. He's going to have to get in line behind a lot of people. I think here he can probably excel on SmackDown. I think it's a good move to Jeff to stay here. And he doesn't always have to be where Matt is. I mean, there's no, was there some law that he can't be by himself?
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
WWF Jake the Snake Roberts, 1996. When we thought Jake was going to have one last run. And, you know, we realized pretty quickly that he was not going to be there that long at all. And they tried to, you know, revitalize his career, and they tried to have people get behind him. And remember King of the Ring and, you know, when Austin 316 was born, like it just felt like it just fizzled out extremely fast. You know, plus they're bringing up, the abuse that Jeff Hardy, the addiction problems he's had, and Jake had struggles as well. You know, the difference is that when Jake left, you know, then that's when we got what, was it Beyond the Mat? Was that the one where with the snake? So yes. I don't think Jeff will ever be in that position, with his family. But unless Jeff Hardy is not going to be there for more than just maybe a couple of months at most, I don't know why the storyline with Sheamus started so soon.
Yeah.
So, next we had the New Day retain their tag titles, defeating Miz and Morrison, Lucha House Party, and the Forgotten Sons. It was Big E pinning, I think, Lince Dorado. You know, yeah. I got a kick out of Corey Graves bringing up Gran Metalik and, bringing up Hoovy, because he's like, I thought it was Hooven to grab because of the hair and everything.
Yeah,
I love Corey Graves, but with all due respect, sir, you were talking about Psychosis. You go back.
And about Psychosis. That's right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
You go back and you look at when Hoovy was still under the mask and Psychosis when he was still under the mask. You know, I think that was more Psychosis than Hooven to Guerrero, to be honest with you. Just my opinion.
And I thought it was funny when Corey Graves, Big E, just throws his 14-pound jacket at me.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was not a bad match. Again, you know, the New Day are still a viable act for this company, and they're going to keep going with the New Day. The New Day sells shirts. They sell merch. They're going to stick with the New Day.
Yeah, I don't like this, you know, all right, we have certain rules, you know, you have the rules, we'll break them. But, and then they have the commentators arguing about it to try to cover up that it made no sense. This was a fatal four-way, no DQs. So why would you eject Riker from getting involved in the match? And I know Cole and Graves argued about it, but I'm like, you know, just no, it just didn't make sense. I thought it was just stupid. It was a fatal four-way. You couldn't disqualify anybody. You know, I don't mind little things like that, but careless stuff like that, you know, just so it fits a certain narrative, you know, I didn't like it at all. The match was fine. The match was fun. It wasn't a bad match, but I honestly never thought there was any chance that New Day was losing the titles this soon. That was a move to try to get more kids, more than anything, to tune into Fox on Fridays. That was a kid thing more than anything else.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, they go back to Old Reliable, you know? And
speaking of Old Reliable, here comes R-Truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Good segue. He comes out and does his majority of the song, the What's Up, which is really weird to see him say What's Up and nobody say it back. And then comes MVP, comes out, and I thought they were going to have a match, and then it turns out that it's actually Lashley's match, and Lashley comes out and wrestles R-Truth. What'd you think of that, those three interacting?
MVP just, like, passing it to Lashley, I thought was kind of stupid, to be honest with you.
I didn't get that out.
You know, it was what it was. I mean, Lashley, they keep him strong. But I think this was all done for R-Truth to get that 24/7 title. And yes, I saw the vignette later on where he said he's going to get it from Tom Brady. You know, I mean, obviously R-Truth's whole character is to make mistakes and stuff like that. But look, Gronk still has the 24/7 title. Gronk is returning to football. Football is starting very, very soon. As much as WWE is trying to commingle with sports and they're involved, and look, they're a $1 billion company, or maybe not as much right now, but the thing is that they got to get that belt off of Gronk. So
of course,
when R-Truth says he's got to get his baby back, R-Truth is going to get that title back. And they probably already recorded
it. I thought he meant Carmelo for a second.
No, I thought he was getting the 24/7 title. I mean, when him wanting his baby back, I mean, you know, it just felt like, you know, and I honestly think they even recorded the title change already. Gronk is probably, you know, maybe still making appearances with that belt. That doesn't mean nothing. You know, it gets a little publicity. But, you know, R-Truth, you know, entertaining. I mean, he lost to Lashley in 90 seconds. Yeah. But it was what it was. I did get a kick out of it. You know, the slap that R-Truth supposedly inadvertently gave to Lashley, when they showed the instant replay, it looked stupid because he just flat out slapped him.
He did, yeah.
But R-Truth was like, you know, look over there. I thought that was funny. Because everything that R-Truth did would probably be something that we would do to just try to get out of that fucking ring so we don't get beat up by Lashley. But, you know, for a 1.5-minute match, I could tolerate it.
It was okay.
You know, I will say two things that I noticed in that match. I don't know if you noticed it, but I know one. I think Joe Punches noticed one of it, one part, and I noticed the other part. When R-Truth said that that MVP has lost some weight, I thought that was funny because obviously MVP has not lost weight. The second thing is that when MVP was cutting his promo, maybe someone in the chat could pull up their ages, but I could swear that MVP called R-Truth a young wannabe punk or gangster or something. Yeah. And I was saying to myself, wait a minute, I think R-Truth is older than MVP. Isn't R-Truth like 50?
R-Truth, I think, is 47.
I think he's like in his late 40s. I don't think MVP is. Could someone check? All right. SM Punk says 48. Which one is 48? R-Truth, I think, is 48 years old. All right, because I remember us talking about, like, my God, look at the condition this guy is in. All right.
He was born in 72. He's 48.
So he's 48. So R-Truth is 48, and MVP is 46.
Yeah.
So MVP calling him young. I laughed because I'm like, wait a minute. You're fucking, he's older than you. Yeah, but it was what it was, you know. I tell you this much. If MVP versus R-Truth still would have went on tonight, my thinking was, what happened to fucking Shane Thorne and Brandon Vink? You know, he's scouting them. You would think that maybe they come out, you know, and do MVP a solid and help him get the win over R-Truth. But, you know, we had that one week of MVP saying, hey, I can help you guys out. I'm not saying that they just dropped it, but, man, talk about horrible consistency with those two guys. You know, it just, I don't know, it just felt so random 2 weeks ago, unless maybe they realized, like, hey, you know, this is a little too random, let's just fucking drop it. So, next we got Bayley successfully retaining the women's championship over Tamina. You know, for all of these podcasters and websites out there, you know, God bless you heterosexual, you know, virgins. You know, but I saw this not once, not twice. I saw it about 10 times. Some blue check marks as well. I think BT Sport even did it too. And they put side by side Sasha Banks wearing the red leather and putting Britney Spears wearing the red leather. I invite everybody out there, do a Google image search and just write entertainer red leather. Look at all the fucking performers from Jennifer Lopez down to models that have all worn red outfits that looked 10 times closer to what Sasha Banks was wearing tonight, because Britney Spears was not showing any cleavage in her red outfit. Again, this is just people that just don't have nothing to write. They got no sources whatsoever. So, you know, just writing articles, you know, like, oh, Britney Spears is jealous. I'm like, do you fucking realize how many people have worn red leather and actually showed cleavage that looked like Sasha? I mean, Sasha looked great tonight.
She did. She looked very good.
I think Tamina looked great tonight, too, in the ring. I thought it was a pretty good match. I mean, it kept my interest.
The finish was a little sloppy when she fell over.
Yeah.
Cradled.
The Darby Allin pin?
The Darby Allin
pin. You want to trigger people? Say it. I look like Darby Allin and caught. Hey, that was funny about tonight. Ripping on Tamina for the pin. I'm like, yeah, and you kept fucking quiet about Darby Allin getting pinned, you know? I mean, at least Tamina, you know, with all due respect, she's like 300 pounds of lard. You know, you ever take a turtle and you like flip them upside down? What happens? The shell is on the concrete and the legs are just going like this. He can't turn himself around.
It's also her outfit, DT. She's wearing a leather vest that looks pretty tight on it. She's wearing jeans pretty much. She's wearing is street clothes, so it's a little cumbersome for wrestling. Not exactly loose. Yeah.
She just painted some of it red to make it look a little different.
But Bayley's really, I'm enjoying Bayley a little bit more now in her, you know, heelish role. I thought for a while she was a little stagnant. Now that Sasha's back and you're waiting for the inevitable meltdown between those two, Bayley plays the, like, kind of the cowardly heel and the cheap shot girl. She's getting much, much better at it now. And tonight she was really in good form. I thought it was a decent match. I thought it was a little sloppy. But Tamina is off for so long and then comes back and gets these blips and bleeps of in ring time that you really can't expect her to put on a classic with anybody. You know, her size, she's a bigger woman, she's an older woman. But Bayley, I thought, was very good in her role tonight, very heelish tonight, and did a good job making probably people want to hate her. So Bayley's doing good at that.
I hope before Tamina retires, she gets the women's title once. I really do.
I don't know about that, DT.
I don't know either, to be honest with you. I mean, she's starting to show a little bit of extension of her real personality. And I brought this up on one of my other shows not too long ago. Reminded me of Big E before Big E really branched out and started showing his personality on air.
He was a serious character in the beginning.
Yeah,
right?
When he was with Dolph Ziggler and AJ Lee, and you know, he'd be like this the whole time. And then
arms folded. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the same time he's doing this, we're seeing videos on YouTube of him making me laugh so hard that, you know, my head started hurting. And I'm like, my God, take that personality and put it on the television. They finally did. And, you know, he's a lovable guy. Not to take a clip from Goodfellas, you know. You're a lovable guy. No, wait, is that what Ray Liotta said? No, you're a funny guy.
Yeah,
no.
You've seen that movie a million times. You don't know that clip.
Yeah. That's your movie. Brain fart. It's very hard to go from New Day and WWE to Goodfellas, you know, in a split second like that. And by the way, for all of the moms out there, and for all of the moms of our extended family, whether they're here physically or in spirit, happy Mother's Day. I know a very emotional day for a lot of people out there, for myself too. I don't want to get into it now and be a Debbie Downer for everyone, but I got to see my mom earlier today, and it was very emotional. And I realized that, especially today is the 4-year anniversary that my mom came home from the hospital, where, you know, she was clinically pronounced dead twice 4 years ago from a heart surgery. Today was the 4-year anniversary. She came home. And, you know, I went there after 2 months. That's a picture of her the night before her heart surgery. And, you know, it was just very emotional. And when I went there today, and I showed up with the mask, and when I, you know, went up to her, you know, I just felt like, wait a minute, I just fucking got both tests. I'm clear. I haven't been around anybody. Yeah. You know, I don't have it. I fucking ripped the mask off, and I was like, I ain't fucking letting this fucking virus that's infected 1/3 of 1% of our country, you know, take away the precious time that I can have with my mom still, because I don't know how many years she has left. Fuck that. That's basically true. Took my dick and shoved it up COVID's ass today. I'm going back there Tuesday also. So seriously, man, I keep my distance, you know, I'll be careful.
But it's from 4 years ago today. She had a good day today, right?
Yeah. No, she was very emotional about it. She didn't even know it was the 4-year anniversary. I didn't even realize the 4-year anniversary. It popped up on my Facebook feed, and I don't go on Facebook. I swear to God, I've posted four times on Facebook in 1 year.
I know. I never see you on Facebook.
No, I just, an anniversary came up of a tweet. I looked at the anniversary, and I thought it was something with my girl, and I look, and it's like, okay, today's 4 years that my mom came home. I was like, holy shit. And she didn't even know. Nobody realized it. So
I remember that. That tells you how far.
Yeah, 4 years already. Surprised the shit out of me. But so, you know, did WWE mention Mother's Day? I don't think so.
I didn't hear anything about Mother's Day.
I didn't hear nothing about Mother's Day.
Anybody in the chat hear that? I didn't hear a thing.
I didn't hear nothing about Mother's Day.
Maybe the beginning of the show, maybe? Maybe they said it in the beginning.
Yeah, I don't remember. I honestly don't remember about anything with Mother's Day. You would think. Nah. Oh, Drew said it. That's right. Drew McIntyre did say it in his promo. Yes, he did.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yes, he did. Okay. You know, and you know what? Maybe they left that just for Drew because he's such a likable guy right now.
Yeah,
he's got that connection with the fans.
Oh, that segues right into his match.
Yeah, let's talk about his match. Let's talk about Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins. And by the way, here's hoping fucking Creepy Ali, whoever's going to tell us the truth, you know, maybe he's going to reveal why and who gave Seth Rollins that god-awful music. Yeah. What the fuck is that? I mean, I understand they want to do like the godlike character, but that's just horrendous. I can never see myself liking that music. That's just like low budget. I don't even know what that is. That's just horrendous, man.
Very generic. I'm surprised they gave him that. I'm surprised he proved it. They should just stick with what he's got.
Yeah. I mean, I get the burn it down stuff, you know, is kind of like doesn't fit the character right now. And they want to.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
This is methodical music. That's the music where you walk really slow, you walk like you're 95 and crippled, that, you know, you just takes you 5 minutes to get down to the ring. That is not like a song that has energy in it and this and that. Like, this just slows everything down even more.
I gotta listen to it again. I just, when I first heard it, I didn't like it, but I'm gonna listen to it again. I'm gonna go back and watch some stuff, like I said, since we finish up early enough. I am gonna watch the matches over again and see if I catch anything I didn't catch before. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely way different than Burn It Down.
Yeah, and you're right, Joe. Drew's mom had passed away, so that's even more of why he made the tribute. So that was good. I kind of wished they would have had the wrestlers take their fucking iPhone. It would have eaten up another 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, and randomly throughout the night, just show a video of a random WWE wrestler wishing their mother a happy Mother's Day.
Well, they put stuff on the Instagram today that they put all the women from Trish Stratus to Miz's wife and all that stuff. They had girls. Like Eve Torres was on there with her children. So WWE's Instagram today did a whole cavalcade of photos of present and past Stacey Keibler with her new baby, WWE women superstars with their kids, and they did a whole lineup of women from multiple eras. So yeah. They did do something on Instagram. I don't know why they didn't do it with the men with their mothers today on the show. It would have been like a charming little thing to do. I don't know why they didn't
do it. I don't know why they didn't do it, but what'd you think? I got to tell you, man.
Good match.
It was a good match.
Drew put on a good match. They matched up well. I thought it was good. Seth did the job in the end, which he should have. Drew should get a decent run with this. I know you had said, DT, your fear is that Drew may never wrestle in front of a crowd.
Yeah, with the belt.
As long as he holds the belt. But maybe he will. But again, he's doing as good a job as he can. I know, like I said, it seems podcasters are split, but you like Drew, I like Drew. Some of our brethren do not on the other show. But I think he's doing a good job. Who else but him? I think he's fine he's doing the job right now well. And as well as you can do with no crowd, and he's an enthusiastic as can be when you're really raising up a belt to nobody in the audience. So, it's not easy. I mean, again, I think you got to put yourself in Drew McIntyre's position. It's his first title run. He's worked for this so hard, coming back from obscurity to world championship, redid himself, redefined his body, his look. And so I'm not going to shit on the guy for 1 second. I think he's doing a hell of a job.
Yeah. I really hope they don't take the belt off of him. The low ratings and the lower interest by fans.
But do you think that reflects on Drew, DT, or that reflects on the overall product? It's not Drew's fault.
Well, this is how I look at it. You know, WWE is not happy at all right now the ratings and the interest and the complaints. So the problem is that if they're going to try to, pun intended, shake things up, usually when you shake something up, it usually involves a title. And, you're not going to, just bring someone back and then they're not, Like, usually there is, Brock Lesnar, they keep showing that Money in the Bank where he came out of nowhere and fucking threw Creepy Ali aside and, grabbed the briefcase. And then that's when he was doing all his dancing and stuff. Brock Lesnar is, I'm not saying he's coming back now, but Brock Lesnar, they have gone to him to shake things up when they feel that they need that little extra jolt. And I've mentioned this for the last couple of years. Nobody bothers to look it up, but Brock Lesnar, has been proven, maybe it's not as much of a jolt as in the past, but Brock Lesnar, as much as people are upset at how little appearances he makes, that's his contract, but yeah. Brock Lesnar does generate a ratings reaction. Yeah. So my fear of Drew McIntyre, I don't think he's failing as champion. I think Drew McIntyre is more likable now than what he was a couple of months ago. I just look at it in WWE's view that if they just feel that they really got to shake things up to try to put a shock rating out there or get a jolt somewhere, unfortunately, they like to go from the top. And yeah. Drew McIntyre might be a victim of circumstance, not of his doing. I hope he keeps this title for a while. Nobody's complaining. Take the title off of him. So, but you look at it also like, who's his next feud? Jinder? As much as that's an emotional thing because of 3MB, I don't know how many fans are clamoring to see Jinder and Drew McIntyre feud. So, I don't know. I'm a little concerned, but I hope they keep the belt on him. But it was a decent match today. I thought it was very good. It was a nice brawl outside the ring, Seth getting tossed around like a salad over the announcer's table. And in the very end, that Claymore kick was beautiful. The camera work was awesome.
Very good.
Just hit it beautifully and knocked him out. And after the match was over, Drew McIntyre is thanking Seth Rollins and Seth looks shocked and everything. But I like that because that was, I noticed WWE is trying to be more of reaction in the sense of what we would expect someone to say and do, not the writing way of saying and doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, people were saying at the end with the handshake, WWE Ring of Honor. But yeah,
no, but that was a sarcastic shake.
No, I get it. But I think that it was good. That wasn't the usual, Seth's going to try and cheap shot him, another Claymore kick to the face. I like that they left off with a handshake and a perplexed look on Seth Rollins' face, like, you know, kind of like, all right, you know, yeah, shook his hand. So, because, you know, people are like, oh, he's going to turn. I don't think anybody's turning anything. I think they just shook hands, and I don't know where this goes from here. Do you think it means anything, DT, to the character of either one that they shook hands? It means anything?
No, I think when, if you follow Seth's promos the last 2 weeks, you know, this was Drew saying, like, you know, Seth, you know, thank you, you know, thank you. It was just like throwing it back in his face, you know, like making Seth look stupid of all the things that he said that he needs and must do, and for Drew and for everyone else. So, you know, Drew McIntyre is like, thank you. But it was like a fuck you, thank you. You know, it's like when someone, you know, is sarcastically wants to help you with something, and then, you know, like you do it, but you don't need their help. Or they try to help you and they screw up, you know, or, and then you fix it yourself and you're like, hey, you know, thanks for the help. I really appreciate all the help. Thank you. Thank you. But meanwhile, that person feels like this big because they realize, like, you know, they didn't deliver on anything that they said. So, but, by the way, my little alert thing in the background for everybody, it's on. I just forgot to take it off of night vision, night mode. So, you know, I'm trying to conserve, like, the bulbs and everything. So it'll be up and running tomorrow. So, but, you know, we'll get into the other questions in a moment because we don't have too many matches left, really, to get into. In fact, the only match left, because we already talked about the ladder matches, was Bray Wyatt losing to Braun Strowman. The best way I can describe this is Bray comes out, regular Funhouse music, not The Fiend. You know, very animated. I thought it was fun. The match, I don't think anybody expected it to be any crazy shit. Braun Strowman is basically a couple of power moves and done. But, you know, it got physical at times, and Bray was taking a beating sometimes. Braun was battling outside the ring. But, you know, the one thing I just thought was goofy was the mask. Because it made Bray Wyatt look like a moron. Like, because, like, Braun puts the mask on outside the ring, and he creeps up from the floor, kind of like when Vince brawled Ric Flair, I think, at WrestleMania, when Vince was all bloodied and he raised himself from the above. It reminded me of that. But, you know, he's wearing a mask, and, you know, Bray's like, oh, you finally seen the light and this, and that. And you could see it a mile away that, you know, this is a setup. And they're in the ring, and Bray goes on his knees, and Braun goes on, and they're hugging. And the announcers made it worse. They're like, I can't believe he's going back to Bray. And then, you know, he takes the mask off. And Bray's like, no, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he steps on the fucking already torn mask. And then he hits a move on Bray and he's pinned. I don't think Bray is being buried in this at all. But man, you know, this did not help Braun Strowman's stock at all, in my opinion.
No, it wasn't as good as the other World Championship match with Drew and Seth. Was a much better match. You would have thought this was interesting because of the backstory. There was a backstory here. And also he wrestled as the Mr. Rogers version. He didn't know Fiend whatsoever. That would have been interesting. I even thought for sure there was going to be a Fiend thing, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
The puppets came out, though.
Yeah. One thing quick. Thank you, Anthony Diaz and everybody else. The match with Vince at Mania where he, you know, appeared from the floor above the apron was against Hogan. It wasn't Ric Flair. I'm mixing the two up. But when he had that big bloody face and he had that sinister smile, I remember it now. He was brawling. Yeah, he was brawling Hogan. But that's what it felt like with Braun today. He like lifts up and he's wearing the goofy mask. I don't know. The puppets were great, you know, but a lot of that was pre-recorded. You know, all those, you know, because the cameras were on. And again, that's another match that was pre-recorded, in case people didn't realize that.
Yeah, again, but, you know, The Fiend, and people get all bent out of shape. Oh, The Fiend and Bray Wyatt. Well, first of all, it wasn't The Fiend, it was Bray Wyatt. I don't think anything's buried in you shake off a loss real quick in wrestling, in either company. It doesn't matter. It's like saying if Kenny Omega loses a match to his buried. He's not buried. He's lost a match. And you're losing a match to another top guy. Yeah. You're not losing a match to a job guy or a mid-carder. Losing to the world champ who just won the title a month ago.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as that. Braun needs to, again, they can't quickly take these belts off of, and there's no reason to take the belt off of Braun or Drew. You know, Reigns ain't coming back anytime soon, and there's no one else to carry the belt right now as a babyface champion except Braun Strowman. Who,
yeah.
Name the guy. Who would be the other guy to give it to?
Yeah.
There's really nobody right now.
Yeah, and Darren, I agree with you. You know, the whole storyline, you know, Bray Wyatt wasn't the Fiend with the Wyatt family. So when Bray's trying to get Braun to come back home, the Fiend wouldn't hand the mask because the Fiend wasn't part of the Wyatt family. So
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. But now you can say, though, that he put Bray down. Maybe the Fiend now can come back and the Fiend.
Right.
There you go.
And with Bray absent with saying three letters, him, we haven't seen him. You know, you're upsetting, you know, him. You know, so the Fiend may come back now. But now with the mask squashed and Bray Wyatt squashed, you know, he might have woken up the Fiend. And maybe the Fiend takes the title off of Braun. I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, Braun was, there's no question, Braun Strowman was inaudible. They were not, empty arena or not, they were not planning on Braun Strowman to be their champion right now. Roman Reigns was the one to be that. And this might actually be a good thing for Bray Wyatt right now, because a lot of people felt cheated when Bray lost to Goldberg. So would you want Bray or The Fiend to be champion right now in an empty fucking arena? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, when you're a last base place baseball team and you're out of the playoffs, you know, that's when you usually, I'm not trying to call Braun a scrub, but that's when you usually put your scrubs out there or the players that might not be all that great and see if they could actually do something and this and that. So maybe you eat up the empty arena stuff right now with Braun as champion and you save that person for a little bit better in the year. Because right now, I honestly feel this, and I truthfully feel this. I think if we had live fans right now, I honestly believe Braun Strowman would be booed out of the building and everybody would be cheering for Bray Wyatt, because Braun Strowman would have been Jesus Christ, and he's the one paying for the sins of Goldberg. Because remember, Goldberg beat Bray, pissed everybody off, and that was done by design. And they figured, okay, Roman's going to take it from Goldberg, so we will cheer Roman because we're so bitter at Goldberg, even though he really didn't do anything wrong. Braun takes the belt off of Goldberg, and Bray still feels cheated. So right now, Braun Strowman is the Jesus Christ, nailed on the cross and paying for the sins of WWE's decision to put it on Goldberg. So right now, I think Braun would be not 100%, but there would be hell of a lot more boos than cheers from fans if they were live in a crowd.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. So,
but I thought the match was fine for what it is. I don't think Bray Wyatt loses any stock in this. You know,
he beat him with a running. He beat him with the power slam.
Yeah, the running power slam.
Yeah.
You know, but it was okay. I mean, you know, I don't think there was any real bad match on the card when you think about it. I mean, sure, some of it may have felt like Raw or SmackDown material. But overall, let's keep the women's and the men's ladder matches apart as like separate matches. So with that said, your favorite match of the night and your least favorite match of the night. And I don't even know if we could count Lashley and R-Truth because that was a minute.
You know, I enjoyed obviously the finish with the two matches. The women and the men's equally I liked. Oscar winning the briefcase, I have no problem with. Otis winning the briefcase, I have no problem with. But my favorite match of the night, outside of the obvious, I'm going to go with Seth and Drew McIntyre as my favorite match of the night.
Okay. Least favorite?
Least favorite, Tamina and Bayley. I just felt that it was a little sloppy. But I thought I'm hating Bayley now. Like, I'm starting to really hate her. Like, you know, she's doing her job as a heel. I want to see her get her ass whipped.
Yeah.
I just thought Tamina was a little sloppy and just looks a little sluggish. So I would say that's my least favorite match.
Yeah.
Overall, you want to give me a rating? I'll give it the pay-per-view. I'll give it a 7.
Yeah. All right. For me, you know, the ladder matches were the highlight. I love creativity. You know, I even after watching Mania a couple of times, I still like the Firefly Funhouse match that much more than the Boneyard match, only because of the psychological creativity of it. The Boneyard match was more of a physical movie type. The Funhouse was more of a thinking psychological inside the mind of, you know, mind of manipulation. So I kind of like that. So of the ladder matches today, you know, the creativity is what really stands out to me more than anything. If I had to choose which ladder match I enjoyed more, probably leaning towards the women, believe it or not. Yeah. Because I really liked the way they used Shayna. Nia's interaction with Otis and others was funny. You know, even Dana Brooke, you know, some of the blunder. You know, Asuka getting the win is something that I didn't expect, which I'm happy with. Yeah. And I don't know. The men was funny, too. I mean, AJ was fucking... Out of everybody in the matches tonight, you know, AJ was my pick, but AJ, I think, entertained me more than anybody else. Baron Corbin, you know, in a perfect world, he should have just jumped off the side of the building, seriously. Should have dropped his crown on the side of the building and jumped off to try to get it, you know. But Otis was fun, too.
He was.
Yeah, I tell you, he was my original pick. I should have just stuck with it. I thought him talking about cashing in with the tag titles, I thought that was the, you know, kind of like spoiling it. But my least favorite match, believe it or not, and I'm sorry for anybody that gets upset at this, but my least favorite match, you know, I would say Braun and Bray, but like it was what I expected it to be. And the puppets around ringside, you know, I wish Braun would have had a little bit more interaction with them. Like, you know, like Braun didn't seem fazed by the puppets. You know, Huskus the pig is yelling and snorting and everything. You know, it would have been funny, especially since it was pre-recorded, if Braun just fucking grabbed it and ripped the head off and threw it like halfway through the arena, like Snitsky kicking the baby.
Yeah.
You know, should have done something like that. So I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with the tag match. It was okay, but I don't know. It just felt like something was lacking. The referee trying to eject Riker, it's like a fatal four-way. It just felt like a hot mess. I mean, the outcome was kind of predictable. It just felt thrown together. And you know, forgotten sons of bitches, you know, they're still, you know, they're not over. They haven't been on TV enough. And honestly, watching that match today, you know what it reminds me of? Reminds me of spring training in baseball, where you hear about the Mets playing like the Port St. Lucie team or the Yankees playing like their AAA affiliate. Like, it felt like WWE versus TNA or NXT. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it felt like the Forgotten Sons are just not on the league of main roster material, in my opinion. They just feel like filler. There's nothing about them that stand out. They have no personalities.
Kind of like The Ascension, and then a few years later it was Sanity, then now this is The Forgotten Son's time. Even though Sanity had some personality, they just didn't let them shine.
They just didn't do anything with them.
Yeah. The Forgotten Son's getting a push. I'm surprised. I think, don't you think, DT, it's all about Riker? They see something in him, kind of like a beat down guy down the road. He's gonna, you know, he had a little run in Impact. What was his name? Guys in not Gunner. Was he Gunner in Impact?
I think it was Gunner.
Gunner. Yeah, he had a little run. As like, you know, he's not bad in the ring. He's got sick physique. He's got a good glare and stare thing going. I'm sure Triple H likes him. If he's even halfway decent still as a wrestler, we don't get to see him wrestle very often. He's just kind of like this beatdown artist. He's almost like Big Dick Dudley to the Dudleys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the side, he's like the guy who comes after them. You know, he's going to go get him. If they put the gas behind him and he's got something, that's all worth it, I think, to those guys. Just say, well, he'll be the breakout star of these guys, and the other two guys will just be whatever. But if they have that purpose, then fine. But if not, they're just here to do jobs, I guess, so just fill a spot.
Yeah. You know? They just, to me, they have no character personality. They look like, all right, three guys, who, you know, maybe there's like a military background with beards, with biker jackets. And it's like, okay, sorry, but that's like a dime a dozen. Seriously, you go across the indie circuit, and you got wrestlers that look like the Forgotten Sons on almost every fucking indie promotion.
Years ago, Killer Tim Brooks was doing that back in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, beard, leather jacket, you know, it's like there's nothing, there's no personality with them. Just being tough and nasty, that's not good enough in an entertainment company. That's why Revival early on, you know, I was talking about it that, you know, unfortunately, you know, being like, you know, old school, you know, unfortunately may not work in today's era. You know, being boring as a gimmick, I don't recall that ever working really all that great.
It didn't work, and people will say back in the, you know, if people want to pretend, they were a great team, but Arn and Tully weren't tearing it up in the WWF as the Brainbusters. They really weren't. It was because they were managed by Bobby Heenan. They were part of the Heenan family. Take Heenan away from those two guys, forget it. They wouldn't have beat Strikeforce once. I mean, that's just the facts. There was nothing there other than good mechanics. Okay, that's fine. A lot of people have good mechanics. You know, that's why Adrian Adonis was a great guy in ring, but he put a character out there.
But they were already part of the Horsemen. You know, Revival weren't part of any group.
No, they weren't. But you need some color. You need some charisma. Yeah. That's never gonna change. I mean, that's the Forgotten Sons. Also, they're doing some takeoff on Sons of Anarchy, and Sons of Anarchy has been off the air now for 5 years or 4 years. I mean, they're a little late on that, the biker thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was in effect a few years back. So I don't know what they're trying to do, but I think it's obvious that Riker is something there.
Yeah.
There's some sort of star they see in him.
Yeah.
You know, the other two are just going to do the work in the meantime.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the Revival, whether they go to AEW or NWA, remember this, everybody. They get super over. It's going to happen, and you're going to see one tweak. You're going to see a more character-driven team out of the two. Look at their fucking names. They're already changing the names like a little bit gimmicky. So the Revival is going to be a little more gimmicky, a little more colorful. And that's what's going to succeed. So I think they will do more outside of WWE than, you know, than what they did in WWE. But if you expect them to just be bland, generic, you know, just fists, no flips, maybe they'll still do fists and no flips. But you're going to see colorful promos, you know, a little bit of charisma. And those ingredients will get them to another level. Unfortunately, those ingredients were not possible in WWE. That's why they had the characters that they had. So their creative juices are going to be a little bit more flowing outside of WWE. But scale of 1 to 10, I give the pay-per-view tonight a 7. Yep. I think the two ladder matches, that was the selling point.
Yeah, it was.
It was a selling point. So so I think we're pretty much done, everybody. Yeah. Let me check if there's any quick questions that I may have left out. Yes, Philip Maffey. Do we think that WWE may be releasing more people soon?
Not sure. I haven't heard anything of UDT. I mean, there's always the possibility, but I think they release so many right now. I mean, they're going to need people to fill these voids. I mean, I don't know how much more they can afford to release, especially with agent stuff. They're really down to bare bones right now. So I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty set where they are, but maybe one or two, like a, someone announced here and there, but nothing like a mass release now.
Yeah. So. You'll see a random person here or there. I think that there's some people right now that expected maybe a little bit more of a rub because of what's going on with COVID and some people being let go, and they may still not be in that position. I think that's why, like, Chris Hero quietly was let go. Nobody really talked about him. And I think other names once, I think you'll see a few more NXT with developmental talents go more than anything else. But I think you'll see one here or there, without a doubt. Shout out to Donnie D'Souza. What's up, my friend? Are we reaching a lower point than wrestling in 94? You think this is worse than 94 right now?
Only because of what happened with and COVID. Listen, it wasn't WWE was no great shakes before this. They were having their problems, but this just made it worse, and no one could have seen this coming. No one knew how it was going to go and when it's even going to end. So I got to give WWE and wrestling in general a little leniency on that. Every industry is kind of reeling right now. So, you know, WWE almost gets a pass in a way when you think about it. When you go back in history and look at 2020, you can't just not put COVID in factor it in. You have to. And once you do that, you got to say, you know what? I can't really. They were playing half the freaking year. They had no crowds. What am I going to say about these guys? So again, it's what they do when the crowds come back and how they pick up the ball and how they go from there. I think that's how we can judge them, and that'll be judged once we're greenlit to have crowds again.
Yeah, overall wrestling, it's nothing like 94. Because 94 is when ECW started to get momentum, albeit regional. WCW is still around. WWF was not even in the Attitude Era yet. No. So there was a bright future for a lot of it. Plus, we didn't even have NWO yet. Like, I don't see any of that in the near future. So, I don't know. I think AEW is nice, but we got to wait for COVID to get out of here and see if there's any casualties. You know, a lot of people are not even thinking about some wrestling promotions going out of business. There are some wrestling promotions right now. I don't want to say who, but I know of at least one and that I have covered on Wednesdays that is about this close of going out of business. Not extremely close, on verge, but very close. Some business dealings that were very important for a particular company are no longer available. And when you realize that there's nothing that you can do to replace that right now, and you're not doing shows, it's not just, all right, we'll just like put it in a dresser drawer. And then, once it's like you can't just like put winter clothes in a dresser drawer. And then once winter comes, I take it out of the drawer and I wear it. No, there's everyday things that are costly. So, but, I'm pretty confident that wrestling will rebound and there'll be a lot more creativity. And we'll see some promotions doing pre-recorded stuff like this. I've been talking about AEW doing something at the Hardy compound for about a month now. I expect that without a doubt taking place. And I don't know if it'll happen at the next pay-per-view, but they are going to pre-record some stuff and then spend weeks of editing and putting it together, and they're going to have some masterpieces. That's why that street fight on Wednesday was a little bit more special than people think, because that was live. That wasn't pre-recorded. So,
yeah, so I mean, there's some good stuff that's already come down the pike from the, you know, that match that you just saw with the street fight, the Undertaker thing with AJ. So there's some stuff, and we're not even at the halfway point of the year. We got, you know, another 6 months to go of this year. So anything can happen.
Yeah. So shout out to Cassette Classic. I like that. SM Punk, what was the point of the fake Doink the Clown? I don't know what the fuck that was.
That was Frank the Clown. I think that's Noel Foley.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. Like, that was just so random, and like, I don't even. That guy must have done something behind the scenes for them to just give him that little bit of appearance.
He's been with Noel for a long time.
Yeah, I know, but like, do we give a shit?
No, we don't give a shit. Honestly, she's a good-looking chick. I think she could do a lot better, but obviously they have a relationship.
Yeah, know? I don't know. I just felt like, you know, like, why is this person on TV? I don't know, but I thought Johnny Ace was pretty funny, you know, getting the pie in the face.
The white suit on the
The Paul Heyman with the food fight was good, too. He had all that rice on his face.
Oh, Paul Heyman. Yeah, that was funny.
That was good. That was pretty good. But
yeah, I'm going to go back and watch it again later.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of wish to do some more cameos, though.
Yeah, it seemed like mostly office people were in the cameos. Stephanie, Vince, Bruce, Johnny Ace. It was mostly got people like that. No real wrestlers, actually. I mean, was there? I mean, something. Oh, there was no wrestler cameo. Well, Elias came out at the end, but
you want to know something? I wonder if they had more cameos of the producers, and maybe they edited it out because they were furloughed.
Oh,
wouldn't surprise me if there was a few other
maybe Finley or some
IRS.
Like
you know,
IRS. Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember exactly what week it was. But anybody remember the exact date that the releases went down? Because this was recorded April 15th.
Was it before that? I think it was around that time.
Oh, shit. So April 15th. Is April 15th tax day?
It was, because they commented. It did happen that day. Because
wow.
They commented that IRS was released the shit. Day of tax day.
So just think about that. Just let that. We could leave on this note. And as far as the stuff with Del Rio and that stuff, we'll talk about that tomorrow. We got another show tomorrow. But just let that sink in at the very end of the show that nobody is correlating. And we didn't know it either.
No.
Just think about this now. They recorded a majority of the ladder match on April 15th, the same day that they released 30. Imagine the chaos going on in that building. I'm not praising it or shitting on it, but just think about that. They had all of those stars in the WWE headquarters, and the same time they're recording those ladder matches and doing what they were doing, you got Vince on the phone, you know, basically calling his, you know, his henchmen to get in touch with these wrestlers to fire them.
Yeah.
Wow. Just think about that. Holy shit. Same day they filmed this, they fired everybody. Wow. It's pretty amazing, man. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens on Raw tomorrow. Well, like I said, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll see what they do with Becky Lynch, with Randy Orton and Edge. Rip Van Winkle's. Let's see if we get any other surprises. So any final comments before we go?
No, again, pleasantly surprised, and it was a good thing to do tonight. I'm glad it ended early. It's 11 o'clock, and we could still do some other stuff for the night. So
yeah.
There you go. And shout out to everybody in the chat on YouTube, everybody on Discord. Thanks to all you guys for sticking with us tonight, and we'll catch you tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Talk to you tomorrow night. Okay. By the way, everybody, saw a few people in the chat write this, you know, this episode tonight. Oh, shit. I seriously apologize to everybody out there. I just realized it. If you look at this, see this graphic? Yeah, tonight was the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show. It was not the Don Tony show. What happened was, and two graphics, because I wasn't sure if, you know, we were doing the show together or solo. So early in the week, I had the Don Tony Show banner made up. And then once I realized that, you know, Kevin and I were going to be doing the show together, I put the Don Tony Kevin Castle Show banner together. And that's what is featured on YouTube right now. So when, oh, I get it now. Now I understand why when some of you in the chat were saying, no, this is the DTKC show. No, no, no. I mean, it was just the Don Tony Show. No. This was DTKC show recap. So I just realized that. So, man, you know, that was not intentional. Believe me, everybody. I swear to God. But, you know, yeah, no. That's look, again, if you look at the screenshot that I have on YouTube right now, that's what's being shown. But I didn't realize that I have the original graphic. So that was not intentional, everyone. I mean, I could splice it in, but then everybody's chat disappears. You alter the shows at all on YouTube, chat room disappears. So I don't want to fuck with that. But I hope you enjoyed this pay-per-view recap for the DTKC show. We'll be back Monday night, 11:05 p.m. Don't worry, there won't be any slip-ups with graphics. You know, it'll be a good show. I think Raw, you know, look, remember, Raw is going to be recorded early in the day because it was 2 weeks ago that Raw had recorded and then on few hours delay, and then they recorded the following week. So tomorrow night will be recorded during the day, and then it'll be airing at 11:05 on a tape delay. Same thing tomorrow or Tuesday, they will record next week's Raw. So a lot of people of what you see tomorrow expect to see them the following week too. We'll talk tomorrow about Alberto Del Rio. I have not said anything yet for a very important reason. I'd rather wait until tomorrow since this is really a pay-per-view recap. But we definitely have some stuff to get into tomorrow. So I hope you all could join us live. And pleasure as always, everybody. And wow, man, 11 o'clock. Get to put this online early. Not even 2 hours. That means the video goes up quick. And I want to thank everybody for your support. Just thank you for making this so fun because I'm having a ball. And we really just got to try to make the best of what's going on right now. You know, seriously. I know we're all being fed chicken shit in many different ways, physically, emotionally, you know, financially. You know, you just got to hang in there. Just hang in there because I think the worst is over for a lot of us. So much love, everybody. I'm going to jet out of here, and I will catch you all again tomorrow for the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. Take care, everybody. Ciao.
Don, oh my.
It was fun to channel surf. It was kind of hard to do a little pocket pool after you're hitting the last channel button 50 times for 2 hours plus.
Don, oh my.
And his whole idea of overanalyzing, oh, he's an alcoholic and he misplaced the belt. And how could you have someone champion like that? The fuck out of here.
Wednesday night?
Don, oh my. You're going to have fun. You really are. Ah!